From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 30th day of September 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. It's USDA Quarterly Grain Stocks Report Day. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. We'll take up the report and today's markets with him. A bit later in the program, Pete Levitt will be here to explain what the weather across the world looks like for the growing regions. And as we move into the second half hour, Daryl Good will join us with his estimate of what USDA's report this morning means in the marketplace and whether rationing actually took place at $5. Or whether there needs to be something higher than that. That all takes place during this hour-long edition of the Closing Market Report. Stay with us for the whole thing if you can. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can visit us online at willag.org.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago on this Thursday, report day, futures finished like this. December contract in the wheat pit for soft red, 9.5 cents lower. $6.74 the settlement price. July of next year at seven, 12.75, down 6.75. December hard red, 7.07.75, down 9.25 in Kansas City. From Chicago, nearby corn, December contract down 9.25 cents today, $4.95.75 a bushel, the settlement price. March at 5.08 1/4, down 9. May at 5.14, 8.25 lower. July corn at 5.17 1/2, down 8. And December futures at 4.81 1/4, down 1.75. November beans, $11.06 3/4, a settlement price there, 7.75 higher for the day. January futures, 11.15 3/4, up 7.75. The March at 11.22 3/4, up 7.25. And May beans, 11.24 3/4, 7.5 higher. Next year's November at 10.85, up 8.75. October meal at 3.02.10, down 40 cents. October bean oil, 64 cents higher at 44.70. Mercantile Exchange, October live cattle futures, up 47.5 cents at $96.70 a hundredweight. September feeders at 109.92 1/2, finished 45 cents higher. And October lean hog futures today, $77.77 1/2, up 60 cents for 100 pounds. Happy birthday on his 60th, by the way, to my brother Bill in Elkhart, Illinois. You're listening to Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. November crude oil futures, $80.06, up $2.20 a barrel. Ethanol at $1.99.04, down 2.2. Natural gas at $3.87.2. That's down 9 cents for the day. And the heating oil, or diesel fuel, at $2.24.4 of a cent, up 5.3. Gold futures in the October contract at $1,307.80, a settlement price down 70 cents. In the Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 10,823. That's down 12.1. The U.S. dollar at 78.7 is up 0.01 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it's explained by the National Weather Service. They say that this afternoon skies will be sunny, a high near 74 degrees. The winds will be out of the north between 17 and 20 miles an hour. It will be breezy. They'll gust all the way to 26. Tonight, mostly clear skies, a low of 47. North winds between 5 and 10, gusting up to 16. And then tomorrow, sunny skies for a Friday, high of 72 degrees. Northwest winds between 3 and 11, gusting to 16. Friday night, partly cloudy, a low of 44 degrees. Winds will be out of the northwest at 5 to 8 miles an hour. And Saturday, it'll be mostly sunny, a high near just 61 degrees. North winds between 6 and 15 miles an hour. They'll gust all the way up to 21. Saturday night, it'll be clear and cool, a low of 40. Sunday, sunny with a high near 56 degrees. Sunday night, clear and a low of 35. A more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of this half hour. And we'll talk with Pete Levitt, agricultural meteorologist, right here on Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You are listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Thursday afternoon. Time to check the agricultural futures markets. Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group is in Decatur, Illinois, joins us by phone line. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Good afternoon, Todd.
The United States Department of Agriculture released its quarterly grain stocks report, the last one for the year, so the fourth quarter. And that means you can sort of forward figure some things out of it. They raised a couple of things. They suggest the corn stocks are up 2%. That makes the ending stocks for the year about 300 million bushels higher or something along those lines at 1.7 instead of nearly 1.4 or thereabouts. What'd you think of that number?
Well, I think the answer lies somewhere between 0 and 300. I know USDA's come out and tried to explain away that new crop inventories are not supposed to be counted in the survey, but I would venture to guess none of them have run an elevator. This year, when we were in full blast of harvest from basically late July in the Delta areas and then mid-August in the fringe areas, and this is where it probably gets a little tricky, is that the Ohio River Valley was in full harvest from August 15th forward. So I know they come out and say you're supposed to, the new crop's not supposed to be counted, but when you're sitting in an elevator and trucks are coming in and out, how do you know which is old and how do you know which is new? And this comes at a time of year when people were cleaning out their bins with old poor corn and then some were bringing in new corn. So I think that's not necessarily the case. I think some new crop inventory is counted in that number. If they're so sure of that number, I guess the question is then they must have really blew the June number. So USDA is in a situation where I don't think they can win on this one. And I don't mean to criticize anyone out there in Washington. I know a bunch of them out there, and I know they do a good, they do the best job they can. But statistics are statistics, and application of theory is application of theory. I remember back in the old days when the computer was first being invented when I was in college, it was garbage in, garbage out. And I think there's some argument to say that some of this was garbage in and garbage came out.
And the feed and residual number, as Darrell Good will tell us in the second half of this program, is noisy, and that explains away some of it, I suppose. They increased that one, that's where a lot of this actually came from, I suppose.
Yeah, the feed and residual number did look high when you look at it from a year-to-year basis.
In June, anyway, it looked high.
The stocks number implied that we were running a higher feed usage, so USDA had to bump up the feed usage in June. Now, with today's stock number, they'll probably lower it back down.
Correct.
To 5.2, see? So the June number did look large compared to a year ago. But like I said, there is a residual factor in there. We had a lot of poor quality issues in this year's crop. USDA is kind of in a no-win situation here. Either they really missed the June number or they really are missing the September number, and the answer probably lies in between all of those in
the
there.
The number we have is the number we have, nonetheless, I suppose.
Yes, that's the number.
And let me ask you about the trade for the day, because yesterday, on Tuesday, it seemed that you were looking at the close of the corn market and you were thinking, can it hold? Will it hold? It managed to do that in the $5 range yesterday. And then we got the number this morning, and while it dipped into double-digit losses, we're down 9.25. That doesn't seem horribly bad as you look at those numbers. What'd you make of the trade for the day?
Well, I think it tells you that the underlying supply-demand picture is tighter than what USDA's numbers suggested this morning. I mean, if USDA's numbers were correct, basis levels would be really sloppy, and they have not for the past 30 days. They've been very tight, very snug. And then the other thing is stocks reports, I've always viewed them as old news because the market has already worked the fundamentals of those numbers for 30 days by the time they come out. So I don't think this is an earth-shocking number, and we'll see what happens here tomorrow. My guess is the corn market is going to move higher tomorrow because of, you know, this is a fairly nice close. When you take into account we were down to 478 at one time during the trading session, we closed at 495. So my guess is tomorrow is going to be higher because people's going to take another look at those numbers. And now that doesn't necessarily mean that the technical action is positive for the week unless we have a strong up day tomorrow like we did last Friday. We're going to close lower for the week. And there is going to be somewhat of a reversal down on the weekly chart.
It'll be an outside down.
But then on the flip side, you can argue that the monthly chart looks nice. It's bullish formation. The quarterly chart is in good position to move higher. So it's kind of a draw in a sense. So this week's reversal down is going to have to be validated early next week with some strong follow-through. And if you don't get that strong follow-through to the downside, everybody that's short based upon that weekly reversal down is going to get taken to the cleaners come Monday, Tuesday.
All right. What did you make of the soybean numbers? Not really any changes to speak of there.
No changes in the soybean numbers, but what's bullish that nobody talks about is if you take a look at USDA's small grains report, and this was a small grains report, that you can imply that maybe USDA is carrying too large a soybean planting number on the balance sheet. So you could maybe argue that maybe the acreage in soybeans is down 1.5 million acres.
Wait, did that come in the sorghum or the rye or the barley or the rye?
Well, I don't
have
that
number
too much
in front
of
me,
weeds,
but I did look at it.
But anybody that crunches your acreage numbers
right
away will say, oh, whoa, we got 1.5 million acres planted too large somewhere in here, and then right away you point to the beans. And that was one of the things that brought the beans back, because you're going to hear people talk about in the October report the USDA is going to make some downward adjustments in planted acreage.
Well, we've heard that from Informa and a couple of other places, and I guess they've got some numbers. They may even have the FSA numbers, I suppose. There's rumors out there that they did a Freedom of Information Act and managed to pull those out. We'll see, I suppose.
That doesn't surprise me. I've seen some survey reports that would indicate that maybe USDA could be high on that number. But, you know, we'll see what USDA does, you know, on the report.
And then we had a lot of wheat numbers in this morning's reports, too. Did you take a look at them?
For the most part, positive in a sense is we basically reduced production numbers, but the stocks number came in pretty well with expectations. So there wasn't anything really bullish, so to speak, in the report. It was mostly a neutral number, and I think we kind of got hit hard because of the big declines that we saw in corn.
Okay, so from the grain stocks report and taking a look at wheat, we're calling it neutral, but because it's not bearish, that's a friendly number. And then in the soybeans, you looked at the grain stocks report and said, well, or the small grains, that is, and said, hey, like Informa says, maybe there's fewer soybean acres out there, and we might find that out in the crop
October
production
report. Yes.
And that's probably a positive. So we saw an up move in the soybeans today, and we're waiting until next week on the corn.
Well, yeah, you're going to have this technical reversal validated, and that's some way on soybeans. Now, soybeans have a reversal down going, but if you have a strong day tomorrow, you'll negate that. So you'll have to kind of see. But the thing on this corn is that demand is very strong. The yield reports are suggest that we got some more downward adjustments in supply coming at us. And then even on the beans, the bean yields have started to level out now to be more normal as we get into later beans. I know the early beans had big yields, so maybe this bump up in soybean yield in October report may not be as large as what the market's working in. And then if you would have an acreage adjustment to the downside, maybe we've seen the biggest carry out in soybeans too. So as always, the market is interesting, and there's a little bit for everybody to kind of spin their way depending upon which position they want to argue.
Dan, thanks so much.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker is with ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon. Dave Dickey will be here in a moment to take a look at the agricultural news.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
In agricultural news, the U.S. House of Representatives failed to reauthorize the child nutrition program with an increase in funding for school lunch programs before leaving for a recess yesterday. The Senate had passed a bill reducing future food stamp benefits by $2.2 billion to pay for part of a $4.5 billion increase in the school meal budget over 10 years. But anti-hunger advocates and more than 100 Democratic House members objected to reducing food stamps to pay for school meals. A World Trade Organization dispute panel today says that U.S. measures that effectively banned imports of Chinese cooked chicken broke international trade rules and caused injury to China's economy. The chicken dispute originated in the U.S. over nervousness about Chinese poultry following outbreaks of bird flu in Asia. China said the measure was discriminatory and protectionistic because its poultry met international health standards and was being exported to Europe and Japan. The Commerce Department today says U.S. economic growth was a touch higher in the second quarter than previously estimated due to upward revisions to consumer spending and business inventories. Gross domestic product growth was revised up to an annualized rate of 1.7% from 1.6%. A federal judge in California has once again ruled that a USDA agency violated a federal environmental law by allowing companies to plant Roundup-ready sugar beet seedlings. The ruling reflects the hard line federal judge Jeffrey White has taken in demanding USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service follow the environmental impact statement requirements in attempting to deregulate Roundup-ready sugar beets. USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack expressed frustration over the latest ruling, saying the uncertainty over whether farmers will be allowed to plant Roundup-ready sugar beets is stressing farm families who grow sugar beets, many of whom also are in cooperatives that own the sugar beet processing facilities. China today hit back at a bill passed by the U.S. House of Representatives aimed at pressuring Beijing to let its currency rise faster by branding it in violation of world trade rules, but Beijing stopped short of threatening any retaliatory actions. The bill could fan the flames of a long-running dispute with China over trade and jobs. China, the largest foreign buyer of U.S. government debt, with holdings of nearly $847 billion as of July, says its big trade surplus with the U.S. is due to Americans saving too little and no longer making the goods that China sells. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and of Commodity Week. Both programs you can listen to anytime you'd like at willag.org. You can also hear the second part of this program, The Farming World, there. Today, we'll talk with Daryl Good, ag economist at the U of I, about this morning's USDA reports.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
Now up next, you know, no-till farmers have a no-till fall nitrogen application option. I'll have more with the Extension Soil Fertility Specialist from the U of I. No-till farmers are really committed to not disturbing the soil profile. It gives them often limited options for many field operations, including nitrogen applications. There is one possibility in the fall, says Extension Soil Fertility Specialist Fabian Fernandez from the University of Illinois.
The other option, viable option for those type of settings is ammonium sulfate that can be applied on the soil surface and without the concern of volatilization that could occur with other nitrogen sources that, of course, are not anhydrous ammonia needs to be injected, and other sources of nitrogen that can be broadcast are not appropriate sources for the fall time. Ammonium sulfate is one of those sources that can be used. It's the only one dry product that I would recommend if you need to apply something in the fall that is a dry product. Ammonium sulfate would be that source.
Urea as a nitrogen source in the fall is most definitely not an option, says Fernandez.
No urea. Urea, it's converted very rapidly to ammonium once it's in the soil, and it can be nitrified quickly. And so the chance of nitrogen loss is just too big to risk applying urea in the fall.
Well, the other note about applying nitrogen fall, spring, or whenever for the corn crop is that the right rate needs to be applied. There is an online in-rate calculator for the whole of the Midwest. It zeroes in by region, and each state provides the data the calculator draws upon to make nitrogen rate recommendations. The in-rate calculator is hosted by Iowa State University and can be found most easily by typing in-rate calculator into Google. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
Listening to the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media. A couple of things of note. You can always pick us up online anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming from the pre-opening market report to the closing mark report on a daily basis and everything in between, posted not long after we air it on our radio station. Commodity Week is there as well under its own tab and heading. Commodity Week, our weekly look at what's been happening in the world of agricultural markets. It's all at willag.org. And if you can't get to the website, dial this number, 217-333-3434. We call it our mobile analyst portal. It's voicemail, updated with the opening or the closing numbers and a bit of analysis at 10:15 and 3:15 daily.
It's National Mulled Cider Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1861, William Wrigley Jr. was born. An American salesman and manufacturer, he started out as a traveling salesman at the age of 13, selling soap for his father's company. At age 30, he left his father's soap factory and moved to Chicago, where he began manufacturing soap and including free baking powder as an incentive. When baking powder proved more popular than soap, he switched to offering baking powder with chewing gum as an incentive. And then you guessed it, the chewing gum proved widely popular, and Wrigley's Chewing Gum was born. In 1958, pie plates being sailed around among employees at the Frisbee Baking Company at Yale University became the inspiration for the Wham-O Standby. In 1962, the United Farm Workers Union was founded by Cesar Chavez. And in 2004, California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger signed into law a bill that bans the production and sale of foie gras. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and Moline. More information is available from Rob O'Malley in Champaign at 217-378-7633. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Thursday afternoon. Pete Levitt, meteorologist, is on the phone line to take a look at the weather forecast with us. Hi, Pete. How are you today?
I'm good, Todd.
When I look ahead, it looks like there's some awfully chilly temperatures for our part of the world as we get through the weekend. What do you see?
Yeah, there is. One cold front came through. That's sort of the leading edge, and that's why you've got these brisk northerly winds and the temperatures hanging there in the mid-70s today. There's a secondary cold front coming along, though, which will come through tomorrow. And behind that, we have some much colder air. So look for tomorrow's temperatures to be on the cool side. They probably will get up into the low 70s tomorrow. And then only the 60s on Saturday as the colder air comes in. And then Saturday night, I've got those numbers in the 30s for much of central northern Illinois. There'll still be some wind blowing, and so the temperatures probably won't frost out in too many places. But then by Monday morning, we think we can get the winds down enough under high pressure that we may see the first good frost of the season on Monday morning. Temperatures getting into the mid to low 30s, and that usually means where it's calm, you'll get some frost. The air is quite dry, so the frost won't be extensive, but it might be enough to tinge some of the plants, and the sensitive plants may find the growing season ending early this coming week.
So if you got some sensitive plants probably in your garden or just outside flowers, make sure you get them covered on Sunday evening, I suppose.
Right.
Talk about some of the other growing regions, because it looks like it's going to be pretty dry in the Midwest, and harvest should continue unless you don't see that in some places.
Oh, no, that's absolutely what's going to happen. Now, for a change, the wet weather looks to be gone as far as the Midwest is concerned, at least through the next week, and as far as really as I could see, the wet weather has shifted eastward, where you're about to get a massive amount of rain right up the east coast from the Carolinas right up into upstate New York and New England, and some amounts in there will be in the 6 inches or more category, and there'll be some local flooding, and this is the kind of pattern we haven't seen in the eastern U.S. this summer. Now it's their turn to get the rain, and the good news is that it's fair weather and just excellent harvesting weather for most of the Midwest.
And how about in China for their harvest?
Well, in China, the for this past week, we've had some showers in North China, which has been a problem in some of the late harvesting. But in the south, monsoonal rains are providing still active in southeast China and providing some pretty useful precipitation for that area to get their second season crops underway. But in the eastern China, where it's been drier finally, the cotton harvest is moving forward. It's the wet conditions. We're mostly in the northeast section of China where the corn and soybeans harvesting has been delayed by the wet weather up there. But all told, they'll keep the moisture now because they'll need it later, and I think it's just a delay. I don't see that pattern persisting up in that part of the country.
10 or 15 seconds on planting in the southern hemisphere.
Southern Hemisphere, well, they're still waiting for the rains in southeastern Brazil, north of southern Brazil. They still have plenty of rain down south in the Rio Grande do Sul and those areas up into Paraná. Up north, though, in the northern portions of southeast Brazil and the heart of the soybean belt, they're still waiting for the rain. I think it's going to be coming this week or next. The Argentina's had some rain that it needed. It's still a little too warm and dry in central and southwestern portions of the Argentine. But except for that area in the northern belt where they could use the rain, they're looking okay.
Thanks much.
Mm-hmm, my pleasure.
Pete Leavitt is an agricultural meteorologist. We now join the Farming World in Progress. We'll be talking with Darrell Good about this morning's USDA report.
Surprised the market just a bit, raising the ending stocks for this year by about 300 million bushels. That'll show up when we get the first crop production report for the month of October. That's due out in a couple of weeks. Darrell Good came downstairs from his Mumford office to my studio there in the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences this morning to have a discussion about the quarterly grain stocks report and what he saw from the USDA numbers.
U.S. Department of Agriculture released its quarterly grain stocks report, final one for the last marketing year this morning. What'd you see in those numbers?
Well, I think the most interest was in the corn number. USDA estimated old crop inventories as of September 1 at 1.7 billion bushels. That was considerably larger than the USDA forecast in their latest supply and demand report that was released earlier this month, about a 300 million bushel find there in terms of our total inventory of old crop corn.
And where did they find it?
Well, basically, if you look at compared to a year ago, the increase year over year was in commercial facilities off the farm. On-farm stocks were actually down a bit. And so the question is, how do you judge this number? Do you accept it as being correct or not? And the way I do that is say, what does that number imply about our feed and residual use of corn during the marketing year just ended? And my calculations have suggested that number comes in at about 5.2 billion bushels. That's where we were the previous year. That's what the USDA has been forecasting for next year. And I think it's more realistic number than the 5.5 billion bushel that USDA has been carrying in its balance sheet since we got the June 1 stocks number that was surprisingly small. It forced an upward revision in the expected amount of corn being fed. This number basically says that was kind of a fake out, and at 1.7 billion bushels, the numbers look really pretty good on the balance sheet for last year. They all make sense to me.
And you say the number they've been carrying, but have they been really carrying that, or was that just sort of a number that was there and you had to calculate it?
No, it's a number they've been carrying in their balance sheet since the June 1 stocks number came out. It implied a very high rate of feeding of corn during the third quarter of the marketing year, and that implied high feeding rate then caused the USDA to raise their forecast for the year up to 5.5 billion bushels, which we've been talking about for several months. That looks unrealistically high, that animal numbers and so on really just did not justify that kind of number. Now it brings it back down to 5.2. That's a very believable number, very realistic, in line with what we've been doing, and I think says the stock number is probably a pretty good number. And it should be an awfully good number, Todd, because for its stocks report, USDA basically does a census of commercial facilities, asking them for their inventories, and then a sampling of on-farm. And obviously, September 1 is when our stocks are at the lowest level. So the sampling error on the September stocks report should be extremely small because the biggest chunk is held off-farm. That's a census. Very small inventories on-farm. And even though that's a sample, it would not interject much sampling error.
At this time of year, each and every year, there is always question about this particular report and what's actually last year's crop, what's this year's crop.
USDA survey, when they do the survey, is very explicit that this is from last year's crop when they take the survey from the elevators.
Right. They ask explicitly what inventory is held off from previous harvests, whether it's last year or whether somebody's holding two-year-old corn or whatever. But they basically explicitly ask the survey respondents to exclude any inventory of a newly harvested crop, corn or soybeans. There has been some speculation that those stocks are included in this report, and they are clearly not. Some people who think they are say, well, harvest was much more advanced this year as of September 1 or through the middle of the month when the survey was completed, that not only did they count new crop stocks, but those stocks were much bigger than normal because of the early harvest. So when you look at harvest progress data, by mid-month, we had just over 10% of the crop harvested September. If you say what's normal for that time of year, about 7%. So we didn't have a lot more of the crop harvested this year than we normally would. And so even if those inventories were included every year, there wouldn't be much change this year. But the bottom line is they don't include those stocks in this report. And I think those that kind of speak that way need to understand a little more clearly the procedure that is used.
So we'll have a 1.71 billion bushel carryover, no doubt, when we get to the WASDE report released along with the crop production report for the month of October. And can you forward figure without changing the 163.5 on the yield, what would we have as a carryout for next year?
Well, I mean, we were looking previously at, 1.1 or so?
Right.
So if nothing else changes, you add 300 million
and
to that.
1.4. Still very tight.
Still very tight, but a major difference is we're not tight enough that we have to do any rationing. We don't really now have to force anybody to quit using corn. That's a very different price implication than if we got into a scenario where we said supplies are so small that somebody has to quit using corn and we got to push the price up high enough to make that happen. Right now, it doesn't appear that that's going to be the case for the year ahead. But as you indicated, we don't know what that final production number is. But now the stocks report says that if the production is smaller, now it has to be a lot smaller in order to create that tightness that would force rationing. 300 million bushels, 320 that we found on September 1 is basically 4 bushels per acre on a new harvest. So USDA is at 162.5. It could come down to 158.5, and our balance sheet would look just like it did before today in terms of year-ending stock. So unless we get a much larger reduction in the yield or we find that we have fewer corn acres than previously estimated, the balance sheet still looks tight, but it doesn't appear that we're in a rationing mode.
Turn your attention to the soybean numbers as they came out from USDA.
USDA estimated September stocks of 151 million bushels. That was pretty much as advertised and as expected, I think. Their most recent balance sheet had a number of 150 million, so this basically confirmed that number. It does result in a third consecutive year of what I consider to be a kind of a very small residual disappearance of soybeans, but USDA said they reviewed all the data and saw no reason to change the production estimate for the 2009 crop. So for the third year, we'll kind of live with a small residual number.
Yeah, they made note of that. They didn't say anything about reviewing the corn data from last year, but they did make note that they had reviewed the soybean data last year in their written commentary, at least. So they must have understood that number was going to come under some scrutiny.
Yes, and it's not rare that USDA has changed production numbers for the previous crop year with the September stocks report after they've reviewed all the data. To my knowledge, they've never changed the corn production number, and the reason being is that feed and residual category is, in fact, a residual, and it's a pretty noisy category of consumption. So consumption in that category can vary quite a bit without really forcing a revision in last year's production number.
I take it that something between $10 and $11 for soybeans is probably, in your mind, a good sale where that cash price has been. With the change in the corn, and you've got corn now at 480 for the day or something like that, depending at this time when we're recording in the morning, is that 450, 440 area and above, which would be above the average cash price for the year, still a good place, do you think, to market corn? And was the $5 mark that we were heading towards a rationing point? Because it didn't look like it was.
I think the answer to your first question is yeah. I think current prices are still a selling opportunity on a portion of the crop. I'm not sure I would ever want to suggest being 100% sold, because over the next 10 months, who knows what's going to happen. But I think, again, I fall back on at harvest, we're halfway through the marketing year. Why not have at least half the crop sold at $4.50? Cash price is still pretty attractive. Second question, I personally do not think $5 cash is a rationing price. I think when you look at where livestock prices are and what they can afford to pay for corn before they quit feeding, you look at the kind of the shutdown price for ethanol producers with current ethanol prices, that shutdown price is well over $6 a bushel. Some people have been suggesting that we've seen some weakness in export demand with 3 weeks of lower than expected sales. But today's report, we saw a pretty good sales number on corn, and we're right on track for reaching, if not exceeding, the USDA's projection. Importers typically are not very sensitive to price. That's a very inelastic demand. So I don't see that $5 corn, if we had to ration, I don't think the price would stop at $5 before we could accomplish that. I think it would have to go higher. So now, next week, the 8th, when we look at the production number and the USDA's updated balance sheet, and then we can more clearly answer the question, how close are we to a rationing situation for this marketing year?
It makes the 450 mark, the middle mark that the Ag Econ, you folks upstairs, kind of said might be that new middle plateau, look pretty correct at this point.
Yeah, I think prices have suffered a little bit the last couple of years because of general economic weakness, but now we're seeing a pretty robust demand for agricultural commodities, and we've got corn back to that $4.50 level that we thought was kind of the new equilibrium price. Soybeans at $10 or higher, $10.50. Wheat prices at $5.50 cash or a bit better is kind of where we thought we would move to. Post 2007, as we moved into the new biofuels industry and that era, whether we can maintain these, we'll see. But I think these are pretty reasonable price levels.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd.
Darrell Good, ag economist from the University of Illinois. Without a doubt, Darrell will write about the quarterly grain stocks report, I'm quite certain, in his Monday weekly outlook. You can pick that up online at the Farm Doc website at www.farmdoc.illinois.edu. Again, that's www.farmdoc.illinois.edu. It's called the Weekly Outlook, and it's the program that Darrell Good writes each and every week. Shows up in AgriNews and several other places. You can get to it probably by about noon on Monday. You're listening to The Farming World. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
The farming world is coming to an end on the first day of October after a six-month run. We thank you for your support, and we look forward to the advancement of our core mission, distributing regionally, nationally, and internationally information and analysis of commodity markets and agricultural weather. When the situation warrants, you can rest assured we'll follow key agricultural topics and stories, and we'll make room for discussions with those that influence the political spectrum of agriculture in the closing market report, which remains in its traditional 206 to 236 time slot. Again, thank you for your support as we wrap up the farming world.
Here's a quick look at the weather forecast as it comes from the National Weather Service. They say tonight, mostly clear skies, a low of 47. North winds between 5 and 10 miles an hour. Sunny tomorrow, a high of 72. Friday night, partly cloudy, a low of 44. Saturday, mostly sunny, a high of 61. And Saturday night, partly cloudy, a low around 40 degrees.
Hi, this is Illinois Public Media Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey. Up next, bees and honey go together like bread and butter. But the bee has a huge role beyond producing something sweet, one that has huge implications for the backyard and commercial gardener alike. Lisa Brautz explores all things bees in her latest edition of In My Backyard.
My cucumbers have been a massive disappointment this garden season. The plants don't look all that healthy. There are way more male flowers than female flowers. And the female flowers, which supposedly bear the fruit, they're not. It could be this summer's heat. It could be a bad set of seeds. And I do admit to some benign neglect. But it could also be a lack of pollinators, specifically bees, in my part of the neighborhood. See, I need pollinators to come into my backyard and move pollen around from plant to plant, thus nudging my food-producing plants into, well, producing food. But actually, we all need pollinators to do their thing, because if they didn't, it would be a huge problem, agriculturally speaking. Bees have been on the decline for the past several decades for many reasons, but in 2006, the decline sped up. We started hearing about colony collapse disorder, a bizarre phenomenon where entire populations of adult bees would just disappear and die off for no apparent reason, leaving behind the hive's queen, unhatched bees, and food stores. This wasn't happening only in some far-off land either. This was, and still is, happening in the United States, wiping out entire colonies of bees in some states. Experts still don't really know what causes it. The appearance of colony collapse disorder shed new light on the practice of commercial beekeeping, of course, and how large-scale keeping of bees can affect large-scale agriculture. But it also dovetailed with the burgeoning interest nationally in local food, gardening, and related DIY projects. Robbie Nagel keeps bees in Urbana, where his friend J.P. Gogan lives, a large house backed up onto a few acres in a huge garden not far from downtown.
It goes along with a resurgence in local food systems and people saying that they want their own gardens. This is sort of the next step, because honeybees and pollinators are so important for a lot of our food. So it goes along, people say, oh, I want a garden, I have a garden, that's great. And then people say, oh, okay, now my garden needs to be pollinated, and what can do that? Honeybees.
Robbie's grandfather kept bees for 30 years as a hobby. When he decided to get out of it, Robbie asked for all of his beekeeping equipment so he could learn how. Just like when I asked my grandmother to send me all of her old wooden knitting needles after she gave up knitting. Robbie's grandfather, like my grandmother, was happy to give him the tools he needed. In Robbie's case, those included hives and frames, a bee smoker, and some bee tools. He even gave Robbie a few bee suits and hats and veils. You have to wear this stuff if you want to deal with bees. And even then, there's no guarantee you won't get stung. Lately, I've been wondering if I should add a hive to my backyard situation, what with all my spare time and lack of cucumbers, so I decided to pay Robbie and JP a visit to see what it entails. After a short interview, Robbie invited me to suit up. I asked him to describe what that means.
Yeah, for us it means a full suit, head to toe, with a veil and gloves. And some beekeepers don't wear veils. I've seen that before. Some beekeepers don't wear gloves. I've seen that before. This is only my going on my second year, so I prefer the full suit and veil until I get more comfortable with it.
Right. I opted for the suit. It wasn't the best day to check on bees. It was hot and overcast, and there was a stiff breeze. JP, who takes care of the bees when Robbie's not around, was working the smoker. Smoking the bees in their hive disrupts their communication with each other and causes them to eat a bunch of honey, which calms them down. That allows the beekeepers to do their work, and in JP's case, forego the bee suit. Today, Robbie was pulling frames out of the hive to check for honey, and he was impressed with the results.
I put this honey super on 2 weeks ago. It was completely empty, just nothing on there, brand new. And,
oh, wow, it's already capped.
They've drawn it out. We call that snow white comb because it's brand new. The comb can get dirty as the bees walk on it more. And,
this is a great shot.
This looks really nice. I'm really surprised that they were able to do this in a couple of weeks.
I learned from Robbie and JP that keeping bees in a residential urban area is actually really good for the bees and good for making honey, thanks to the huge variety of plants that are grown by people in their gardens. Outside of town, where people grow lots and lots of one or two things, there isn't as much in the way of plant diversity for the bees. Bees can also be harmed by crop dusting in rural areas, so keeping them in town might be safer for them too. The one thing urban dwellers wanting to keep bees might have to reckon with, though, is neighbors. Fortunately, JP's neighbors and housemates are cool with it. Beekeeping culture is alive and well in Urbana-Champaign, too, with the Central Eastern Illinois Beekeepers Association around for assistance, education, and inspiration for bee geeks of all ages, even those who don't have their own bees. They can use this informal network to share equipment and advice and mentor each other, too. Maybe it's not the same as having a grandpa show you the ropes, but it helps. I might decide to go for it if I can clear it with my family and the neighbors. Yep, I've scoped out the perfect location for a hive in my backyard. Stay tuned.
Lisa Broth's stories can also be heard on our website, willang.org. Click on the In My Backyard link in the right navigation window. And you can read her occasional blogs at majorprogression.wordpress.com. If you have an idea for an In My Backyard, email us at willagstaff@illinois.edu or call us at 217-333-7300.